Welcome to Tales from the Green Room, backstage conversations from popular music venues around the country, curated by Mount Tam Media. Listen in as host Dennis Trezullo and Mount Tam Media founder Tammy Larson dig up conversations with artists before and after shows in the exclusive confines of the Green Room. Are you ready to talk about Wolf Jet?
You know, I have to say, like, you came home from, was it Camp?
Camp Navarro.
And I couldn't go because, of course, I was working. And he was so excited. I mean, you were so excited about this interview. And, I mean, first of all, the story is just unbelievable. But, you know, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But when I listened to it, I was just blown away.
And how about their music?
And their, but you know, more so the music, because we also played a bunch of their music.
And so what happened is I actually saw them, I've heard about them through the corner of my ear, Wolf Jet, but I'll be honest, I didn't know a damn thing about them.
Would that be the middle ear?
No, it was the left ear. And so I went to the Camp Navarro, Camp Navarro Under the Moon, and it was featuring Neighbor from back east, our dear friend's Neighbor, and I had to go, right? Even though you were working, I had to go. So Wolf Jet's on the bill. Midnight North is on the bill as well. And some others, Con Brio. It was a great deal. You got to go to Camp Navarro if you ever get that chance. And so there were not a lot of people at this one because Neighbor came out from back east, and it's tough to bring all your people back from back east. But it was a great, intimate weekend, and I got to know Chris Jones and John Payne, you know, pretty well over the last couple of days, and found out that they were coming to Mill Valley, our home. Just a few days later, I said, guys, we got to sit down for an interview.
Absolutely.
And they were more than happy to do so. And we did it and sat down with them. But before that, while I was up at Camp Navarro, thank you, Michael Wilson, for giving me the internet password up there. And I, from my tent, I was able to Google a little bit about Wolf Jet, and I found out about their amazing story of resilience and would-be tragedy, really, and perseverance.
It was a tragedy.
Yeah, it was a tragedy. I mean, there was no deaths in their circle, but there was a fire called the... I forgot the name of it. There was a lightning fire in Santa Cruz, and it was devastating. And so it was a tragedy.
And this was like around 2020, right?
It was around during the COVID time. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I read how this happened after they had built a studio in John Payne's house. And by the way, this is John Payne. I don't know if I said that already. John Payne and Chris Jones, really the two leads, but the whole band is awesome. Two leads from Wolf Jet. So I thought, wow, that is quite a story. It needs to be told. And it has been told, but it just needs to be told in their words. Mm-hmm. And you put that together with their amazing soulful music. I mean, I asked them to describe their music, and everybody hates doing that. And they said, I don't know, folk and soul probably was the best way. They say on their website, cosmic mountain music.
But it's just good. It's just really good.
And I don't know if you've heard.
They don't sound like really anyone else. They have a unique sound. They take something from everyone, but it is very unique.
Yeah. And I don't know. That's what I said. That's how I described it also when I was talking to them. Great music, because I love it. And so we sat on this interview for a while. And again, our timing is perfect because this is one of the few times we're going to release a podcast and get to promote an upcoming event.
Right.
Now, you know, if you might hear this many moons down the road, but right now, Wolf Jet is having their record release party at the Kumbwa Jazz Center in Santa Cruz on March 16th. And two nights before that is Alex Jordan's record release party as well. And guess what? They're opening for each other, which is another super
cool
thing. But so we're going to be there with our whole Tales from the Green Room staff and doing our thing. But we get to talk about it now in advance. And these guys, Chris, he's from Atlanta. He's originally from Atlanta, Georgia. And I think his family is from Kentucky. His old grandpa, Roland Jett. So where they came up with the name, they just have Southern hospitality just oozes out of his veins, you know, and you'll hear that with that little slight twang during the interview,
right.
You know, and you know what I found super interesting is how they kind of came up through the ranks with Midnight North and the whole Terrapin scene,
so interesting.
Which totally surprised me, but I guess it explained why Midnight North was also at the Camp Navarro thing. Anyway, I'm not going to tell you too much about their story because let them tell it. They deserve to tell it. Show up, if you hear this in advance, at the Kumbwa Jazz Center on Cedar Street in Santa Cruz. It's right there where the San Lorenzo River flows into the ocean.
Right. And before that, if you want to do what we're doing, catch both shows, you can Sweetwater, Alex Jordan. It's his record release that night, and Wolf Jet will be opening. So it's what friends do for one another.
That's what friends do. The album, Time Will Finally Come, I believe is being released on Friday, March 8th. I think that's a Friday. Might not be, but whatever. March 8th. Whatever day.
Yeah, our
just pick a
right
year,
now.
Right? And so you'll hear little clips before the interview starts and after from that record. It's outstanding. These guys are outstanding. The entire band is outstanding. Love their music. And we cannot wait to see them at their release party.
Super exciting. Let it roll.
Enjoy. John Payne, Chris Jones. Wolf Jet, man, so happy to be here with you guys.
Thank you.
Welcome to Tales from the Green Room, and we are in a green room of sorts. This is the Homestead Valley Association Music Festival, Mill Valley, California. Correct? Do I have that right?
You got it.
I could look at my little tag right here, but that is. And well, first of all, welcome to Mill Valley, Marin County. Our podcast, if we had a home, I would say it's Mill Valley, started at the Sweetwater. So we bounced around to quite a few places, but welcome. And tell me, I'm going to start there. Tell me a little bit about playing in Marin County, the Marin music scene, infiltrating that from the Boulder Creek, Santa Cruz area. And I know you both have, I think Terrapin and other places.
Yeah, we've kind of ventured in more with our old band, but this band, we just played one gig, I think, at Sweetwater.
Yeah, we just started back up here. Originally, you know, we had started a band called Scary Little Friends, and that was back in 10 years ago. And at the same time, it just happened that Midnight Norris had just formed. And I don't know how we got in touch with them. I think John reached out to them and said, hey, you all want to do a gig? And they said, cool. And so once we got to know them, you know, that they played there all the time.
Of course.
They kind of put in a good word or something. And then next thing you know, we're playing at Terrapin. And at that same time, Sweetwater had kind of just gotten started as well, the new Sweetwater. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of our in into that world. It's definitely Midnight North and just kind of coming up with them. And
we invited them down to play in Santa Cruz, where we were kind of based in San Francisco and Santa Cruz because we had members in both areas. And we invited them down to this one gig we thought was just going to be kind of a normal gig at the Crate Place. And it ended up that we got a call like the week before. They're like, oh, the band that's playing after you, that they're in a relationship with Nora Jones, so she's going to be there and playing too. And so it was kind of like we invited him down to play this really special gig in Santa Cruz.
It was like our fourth gig and maybe their first, like outside of Terrapin.
This is Midnight North you're talking about?
Yeah. So yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a really fun night, and I think we all bonded on that night.
That's good. It's good. It's interesting to see the you know, there's a little bit of difference from the scenes, right? I mean, East Bay, maybe Santa Cruz, Marin, but I don't know, a lot of overlap too, right?
For a while, you know, Elliot and some of the other members were based in San Francisco, and so I was in San Francisco, and I became friends with a couple people in the band, and John ended up playing with Elliot Peck for a while.
Yeah, actually, I played this festival with her maybe, I don't know when, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So San Francisco was kind of the middle ground because it was a melting pot because we all knew each other. Our drummer was from Indiana, so was Connor, and I think Elliot's from somewhere near Indiana, like Michigan.
She's from a farm, I believe, and outside of Chicago or Illinois.
Yeah.
She was raised in I believe.
Right.
I'll ask her. I'll probably get to talk to her. Tomorrow we're going to be at the Terrapins doing a reunion.
I know. Wish we could be there.
We're going to be back there doing our podcast with everybody. Really excited. Dawes, guys from Dawes are going to be there. Yeah. And a whole myriad of people, including Graham Lesh.
I saw the lineup. Just to see how their growth has happened over the last 10 years is absolutely amazing and also respectable. And they just worked their tails off. And we have a saying in the music business, if you want to see your friends play a festival with them, Yeah. And that's the only way we ever see each other. So we like hung out,
right?
You know,
and, up in, and that's where we met, right?
That's where we met. You at the same, up at Neighbor, the Neighbor Festival.
And Graham was there. I mean, Midnight North was there, Graham and Elliot. So here we go. We bring it full circle to the beginning of the conversation. I want to ask you a little bit, because we're going to get into the hard work, because that's you guys, and perseverance, because I knew of Wolf Jet just out of the corner of my ear, and now I'm like locked in. I told Chris I kissed his ass today, kissed your ass, or the t-shirt today. but I bought the t-shirt not to kiss your ass, but because I thought the music was awesome. I love the logo.
Yeah.
And, you know, your story. And you know what? The merch is where it's at, right?
That's how we survived, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. But, you know, that t-shirt design is really awesome. It is. So
it's really Alex is. Morrison, half of the brothers of Brothers Comatose.
Oh, yes.
He is just an incredible graphic designer and artist, and he's done some stuff for AJ Lee, and we saw, you know, the stuff he was doing. And again, we know them from way back, and John knows them, so he had to make up that t-shirt, and we were just like, that was perfect.
It's badass. Thank you. Shout out to Alex.
Yeah.
And on the drum kit, too, right?
Yeah. No, so,
Laura painted our drum.
Laura did that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
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 All right. So listen, before we get into you guys, a little bit more on that, the Neighbor thing. Mm-hmm. So how did you meet them? Was it through Graham or?
No, Dan, the guy who does the festivals up there at, what's it called?
Dan Braun.
Navarro.
Yep.
Dan is an incredibly amazing guy, and I didn't know him before the festival, but he sought us out very early on in the year and said, hey, do you want to be a part of something really special? And we do a bunch of stuff here, but we'll start you off and just see how this goes. And that was all his vision, to bring an East Coast band to the West Coast, which nobody does, by the way, because I've lived on the East Coast. I used to live in New York, and you might as well be a million miles away.
Right.
We don't have the people that are huge, like Blackberry Smoke is like, they are the hugest thing in the South, and they sell out festivals all up and down the East Coast, and then they come here and nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of sad, because there's so much we're so much alike, and we have so much musical influences in common, and we can be influenced by each other. So I think he was trying to foster that.
Man, he did a great job, because let me tell you, I did know Neighbor.
You did.
I knew the guys from the East Coast, didn't know you guys, right? And the reason being, Tammy, who's couldn't be with us today, our co-host, shout out Tammy Larson, Mount Tam Media, co-host of Tales from the Green Room. We went to the Beach Road Music Festival, Martha's Vineyard.
Okay.
Back, it was kind of like a vacation anyway, but so we go to this festival and this band is playing. First of all, the schedule got screwed up because of a rain out. So we didn't really know what band was playing at the time. It was all off.
Right.
And we're like, man, I think we thought it was either Camp or Dawes. They were both there. And we're like, wow, we like this band. And 45 minutes into it, we found out it was Neighbor. So, wow, I like Neighbor. So they came to San Francisco. And to your point, a month later, they came to San Francisco. I reached out to Lyle Brewer, who is what a badass guitar player he is.
Mm-hmm.
Something. You guys said
Savant might be the word I would use.
Yeah. So I reached out to Lyle and said, shit, you're coming here to the chapel. Let's meet and do the green room thing. And it all worked out. They played probably about 12,000 people at that festival and maybe 100 at the chapel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do that all along up and down the East Coast. So,
yeah. It's a tough road to hoe if you're going to go across. You know, there are people who do it. Like Albino Skunk was one in North Carolina that brought us out on a whim. Nobody in North Carolina knew who we were, or South Carolina knew who we were. And they just bring out bands. And next thing you know, like, we're welcome, open with welcome arms. So it just takes somebody to have that vision and somebody to get a plane ticket.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. That seems to be the hardest part now, is air travel in a band.
It's not easy to get the band out.
Don't talk ask Neighbor about that.
Yeah. No.
They wouldn't even talk about it last time.
Yeah. But man, anyway, so here I am, one of my probably my favorite East Coast band these days, you know, and I got to meet Ricky also through Pink Talking Fish. We interviewed him on the show. So all of a sudden there's you guys, new to me. There's Midnight North, there's Mother Hip. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was
great. Another band that, I mean, talk about influence and going way back. Like, when we were in high school, our friends' older brothers were, like, surfing and listening to the Mother Hips. And this is, you know, many years ago. They were signed to, you know, I think American. And they were on the same label as Wilco and Black Crowes. And we grew up idolizing them. And I lived in San Francisco for years, and just wherever Tim and Greg went, I just followed like a little duckling, you know? And
yeah,
now we get to hang with them.
To hang with them.
We've known them for years.
Hanging with your friends at a festival.
Yeah.
Get to do that.
And that was a really special festival in that we knew all the bands except for Neighbor. And, you know, Cumbrio is friends of ours, the producer of our record. He's the bass player in Cumbrio. So Jonathan Kirshner. And so he brought us into that world, which is Oakland.
Yeah.
Which is his whole thing. King Dream. Kelly McFarling was part of that. There's 20, you know, Patzners. There's so much talent in the Oakland world.
Oh, God.
And these worlds, they do intertangle and they're intermingle, but it's really hard because of the location and because of the busyness of everybody to get everybody on the same page.
And time and money. I mean, let's face it. It's not easy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about Wolf Jet.
There we go.
That was a big pre-career. Hopefully nobody
turned my leg.
Let's talk about Wolf Jet. So here's what I sort of recall from talking to you a couple of weeks ago and reading up a little bit. You had it really going right before COVID, right?
Yeah, we had a record done in March. It was finished and we were pushing because we had three tours, right?
Yeah, we had a few booked. We were going to go to the East Coast back then.
Speaking of, huh?
Yeah.
So how did you guys have been playing music together for a long time though, right?
Yeah, ever since Chris made his way to California with his family. I think it was day one. I think I was sick day one, but I was in a band with these two girls and they called me that evening. They're like, this new kid just came and he plays guitar. Like, it'd be perfect for our band. I'm like, all right, let's do this. And the next day, I guess you came into they sent you something.
They sent me to the band room and they said, just go in there and figure it out, you know, because they didn't have a guitar player in the band and they knew I played guitar. So, you know, that Don Prater, bless his heart, he pulled out this amplifier and he's like, I don't know how this thing works. Figure it out, kid. Like, I'll give you some guitar solos. And so he gave me the opportunity to sit in with the band. And I came in just for perspective. I don't know if you said you had kids, but when they're in middle school, eighth grade is like the year. They're just hot stuff in eighth grade. They're on top of the world. They're going to high school.
They're about to go down.
They're about to hit a wall that they don't realize. So they just think they're hot stuff. So I came in and after Christmas break in eighth grade, in Atlanta, we didn't have middle schools because that's where I was from. And I was in high school. So I had gone to my first year of high school in eighth grade. I had almost completed three quarters of it. And then my dad got a job out in California and pulled the whole family to the West Coast in the middle of Christmas. And he took me, I'll just tell you the story because I love saying it, but he took us to the beach. And I, you know, the whole time I'm thinking like Santa Cruz skateboards, like, you know, Baywatch. And I get there and it's
freezing
like,
your ass off?
Yeah. He took us to Mavericks and Mark Fu had passed away that week. And we were there and people were just like looking at the waves and they're like 100-foot waves, you know, in my mind. I was probably not that tall, but, you know, just these massive waves way up the coast and it's cold. And I'm like, Dad, this is not the California I thought I was going to move to.
And it wasn't.
But I came to love it.
But that was okay. Wow. So what year was that when you came out and guys met you? The kid, new kid came.
We're going to date ourselves right now. That's 92-ish. 91.
Something like
not
that.
Not bad. Okay, that's enough. Yeah. That's far back.
We were 90s kids.
That was far back enough.
So we got decades. We don't even talk about our friendship in years.
It's decades. I just want to give the listeners a little context of, Wolf Jet's relatively new, but you guys.
We've had a few bands over the years. Starting with Puss Monkeys, maybe.
Puss Monkeys. You got great names. What was the Scary what? Scary?
Scary Little Friends.
Scary Little Friends.
Scary Little Friends.
We interviewed Jay Lane, who's now playing drums for Dead & Company. And the first band he was in, I think, was with a guy named Dave Ellis. I'm not sure. It might have been Charlie Hunter, you know, the jazz guys. And it might have been Bob Weir or not, but it was called Scare the Children.
Scare the Children.
And
well, he almost got our name too this time. Wolf Brothers came out after Wolf Jet, by the way.
There you go. So somehow the scary thing is not good for the band name. I'm just saying.
You don't want to scare people away.
Scary records. Little Friends.
Little Friends, Scare the Children. Wow. I'm a little old now, and wisdom is a words I don't have the will to fight no more. Even when I'm winning the battle, I'm still losing the war. And I'm playing with the devil's heart. Some old love tore mine apart. And I've been getting Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just go to Wolf Jet. So that is, I said, sounded like COVID. You were getting ready to go. But take me up to the beginning of the band. Well, back to the beginning of the band.
I think we just kind of ended with Scary Little Friends because Chris was looking for some change, right? And you wanted to go to Spain.
Oh,
so we kind of wrapped that up. And we did this little recording project right before you left, I think. And it ended up being maybe four or five songs that were on our first record. And we just like did this cool work. And it just sat with us for a while. He traveled. We kind of put it on the back burner. And then when you got back, we were just like, let's get this thing rolling.
I moved to New York when I came back. I didn't come back here. I had a relationship in Manhattan. And so I was there for like 2 years. And so I was doing this bi-coastal thing where I was playing shows in New York and trying to get a band started there and then try to get a band started out here because John was doing other stuff at the time. And then when COVID hit, it actually brought us closer, literally, because my girlfriend had left for North Carolina with her kids. And then I split to Tennessee where my parents and my family lives. And John asked me to come out to build a studio at his house. And, you know, I've been coming out there frequently, but that time I just drove out, you know, and I told my girlfriend, I said, I don't know what the future's holding, but for now, I'm just going to hide in this bunker and record music.
And that's during COVID, yeah?
That was during COVID. June was when I moved out. So we had very fresh.
2020. So, and that's what people were doing. Musicians were doing that, hunkering down, right?
Yeah.
Recording music.
Yeah.
John has a beautiful, I don't know what you call it. It's not an estate.
Well, it's just a couple acres in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and you know, and it's a beautiful
land
retreat. We got
land.
And we're up on a hill like this, you know, and you can see some mountains and stuff. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Very isolated.
Boulder Creek is awesome. I think I told you, John, when I was a kid, my aunt and uncle had a little summer home from San Francisco in Boulder Creek, and I didn't think anybody ever heard of Boulder Creek,
right?
And I didn't hear much about it even after that, but.
Yeah,
certainly heard a lot about it since, and it is a great little oasis.
Yeah, it was perfect place to be during COVID until a certain point. But up until a certain point, we were definitely like living on cloud nine in a way because I live with a few friends and my wife, and so we had this nice little built-in community there, and we all got to hang out together and not be too lonely during this COVID period where a lot of people were fully isolated and
our spirits got lifted. You know?
Yeah, really, and really good little mood. Pods. You guys were a pod, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So we started probably like, well, what can we get done here? Let's build a studio. You know, I got a basement, unfinished basement that was pretty tall, and we're like, let's build this studio, and that'll be what we'll do.
Prior to that, though, the record was done, and you were going to go tour on it.
The record was done at that point.
Oh man, you're bringing me back to the part where my heart got broken.
Yeah, go ahead.
In every way,
I'm going to bring everybody up and down during this interview.
Now, we had got that invite to do Albino Skunk Fest out in South Carolina.
Yeah, we were just getting rolling and, you know, had, like you said, three separate tours booked for that first summer where we were really going to get
doors
out there.
We hadn't played a show yet. Doors were just opening for us. And we're like, this is too easy. This is awesome. Like, we should have done this years ago, you know? And
I think it was based on some of the videos we made in our house. Like, we just had some good, like, a good presentation of our music.
Yeah, right? I've seen those. Awesome, yeah.
We say.
So doors were opening and that was great. And, you know, and then we'd had a bunch of really heavy people playing on our record. I remember James DiPrato, who plays as Chuck Prophet, who's one of my favorite guitar players of all time ever. He's an incredible guy. Super awesome. We had one of the guys from Lumineers, our friend Stealth.
My buddy Stealth, yeah.
So you guys were just jamming in the house before the studio even? Just jamming in the living room?
Oh, yeah. We'd have all these sessions and just play music with our friends. And
When Life Looks Like Easy Street.
Yeah, there's definitely danger at your door. So literally the day we finished the studio, And we had just cut one song, remember? We cut two songs, actually, that day. And then the next day, we started seeing the smoke, and it was a lightning storm that night. So the next day, we saw the smoke, and I'm in there doing some overdubs. I'm like, John, look at this. And we had a tape machine, so it was, like, really vintage and really cool. And we were recording, and John's like, have you looked out the window lately, Chris? I'm like, no, man, I'm working. I don't even have time for that. And he's like, well, there's, like, a blood-red sun outside. He was, like, taking pictures of it.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, that lightning storm a couple of days prior was just beautiful. It was like the warm night. I mean, it was like, you know, in all of nature, you know, even these destructive forces, they can
be beautiful.
They can be, you know, unfortunately. Yeah. People
it did
suffer.
It kind of remind me of that part in Ghostbusters where Zool climbs up to the top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah, it was like a little dystopian. You know? Yeah, it was end of days, but it was like, all right, well, I'm here to see it. And it's like lightning everywhere.
But dude, like literally, I remember we walked out and we were like, oh my God, it's so smoky. It's like gross. And that's when the helicopter came flying over, right?
Am I remembering that correctly? Yeah, we heard this kind of muffled helicopter in the distance telling people like to evacuate. Mm. But kind of
us?
Flew right over us. I mean, I remember that.
Didn't really believe it, you know. And so then kind of like, huh, you know, one of my buddies just was pulling back in the house and he's like, well, I was just driving up the hill and people were flashing the lights, honking at me, yelling at me to turn around. It's like, I think it's getting pretty serious, you know. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the neighbors started getting together. We're like, yeah, I think this is the real deal. We better start. Everyone's like, yeah, we're going here. So we packed up the car. We got my truck, just started throwing guitars in. Well, dogs first, maybe. But
dogs first, then guitars.
Dogs first, yeah, then
it
guitars.
It was close.
But, you know, I packed a quick little bag of like, we're probably going to be gone for, you know, I really had a little denial at that point of like, yeah, you know,
too.
I was like.
As a precaution. Okay, as a precaution, we're getting
we're just going to do this, you know, whatever. Yeah,
throw some socks and a t-shirt, you know, for in case we were gone for the night.
Did I hear you had some sort of bag of stuff close by though, because this had happened, there are threats of this before?
I did have a bag packed by the front door that I'd done for a couple seasons now. For a couple years in a row, it was like a habit of like, you know, a hard drive with my family, you know, family photos and a couple heirlooms and grandpa's watch, you know,
good stuff,
that kind of stuff. Just a backpack, you
if
know.
If you could do it again, John, would you put some work boots in there and some work pants? That's what we actually needed. Like, that was the stuff we really wanted. And
I would have put more stuff from the studio, but
that
packed the whole damn studio. And if you could, Jesus.
But we did a pretty quick exit. It was a fly out of there in 15 minutes kind of thing, you know, and we had five dogs because some of my landmates were at work and he had two big dogs and a cat, and I had my dog, and we had all these chickens and stuff, and so we let them out and like give them their freedom and told them good luck. And then we and packed up our dogs and cats and a few bags and guitars and head on down the road.
Wow.
And my wife had actually just watched that Paradise documentary like that week. And so she told me, I was like, I think we can stick around, you know. She's like,
we're out of here.
I am not gonna be like in my car in traffic, and if fires come, you know. She had just watched it. Was too fresh, and she's like, well, let's go.
Turned out she was kind of right, huh?
She was, yeah, she was right.
Yeah. Elizabeth is your wife?
Elizabeth, but we did. So we left that night, and we went to a friend of ours, Denny's house, and he graciously took us all in, even during
Denny
COVID.
Denny and Laura.
Denny and Laura. Yep.
Laura ended up joining the band.
So where are you? Down in Santa Cruz at this point? How far away did you have to get?
We
just hopped over to Felton, and you know, I kind of like that night we kind of watched the hills and you could see the red glow in the mountains in it. And it
but
really
then we got
that's
evacuated.
That's when it really hit home, is like, this is pretty serious. And I remember not getting any sleep, and I was like, okay, let's get up. I was up at five in the morning. I was like, you know, wild. Mine was going crazy.
Of course.
And so I grabbed my buddy Sean, and we're like, let's just go see how close we can get to the house and what it looks like. Drove, and there's some cops, you know, blocking the road, and we're like, hey man, we got some animals up there we got to get to. And so they let us through, and they told us, hey, like, the fire's coming down this mountain, and no guarantees that like we can get to you, you know.
So at your peril, you went back, and
we went back and
three times
we did one trip, grabbed, you know, because there's five of us living up there, so it wasn't all about like me, like get my stuff or my music gear. It was like
family, like extended.
We went one trip for one guy. We got his stuff, and I put a bass and a couple more guitars in the thing, and then we went back with Chris and loaded up my buddy Kevin's house. He had just sold a van and had cash for it, and he's like, I got $20,000 in my closet.
Get that. It's like, all right. I got locked in the van. That was fun.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't put a handle on the door, and the door closed behind me, and so I'm sitting in there, and it's like fire, you know, is like coming. Like, that was the day that the house burned, so it was like every smoke. I mean, we were in terror mode because you're running through smoke, and it's like everything looks like a war zone, and, you know, we like half-assedly like put like lawn like watering things on the roof,
sprinklers
and, you know, we just like hooking up hoses, and I just remember getting locked in that van. I'm like, this can't be how this goes down. Like, I might have to kick out the window. I would have. Whatever, it wasn't that imminent, but it felt that imminent.
But I mean, so you're going back these three or four times, and each time you're thinking maybe the house is still going to be saved,
at that point it's hard to know what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was really just an adrenaline rush of a day that was more like, we're just grabbing a few things. There's always that hope that things were going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that this was just precautionary. But at the same time, there's little denials as strong.
It felt really real.
It
was real.
Who knows, right? You're just in it.
You're just surviving for the moment. Like, it's the most realist I've ever had in my life.
But it was very like, when we were on the property, we were being quick, you know? Right. We were like in and out, because we're like, you don't know where that fire is. You just you can't see very far. And you don't hear helicopters. Crackling.
The cops are telling you guarantee. Yeah.
There was no fire department up there
either. No, your cell phone doesn't work. You're sort of on your own, and you really feel sort of isolated, you know, at that moment. You're like, okay, if I get a flat tire even, like, that's going to be a problem, you know?
Yeah.
God, big problem. So, okay, so how many times? You went back three, four, five times, you said?
Three times. And then called it, and then we went back to, we might have gone back a few more, but we got back to Felton the third time, and right when we got back, the whole neighborhood's packing up.
They evacuated us,
to go, so the other town got evacuated, so it was our second evacuation, and we're like, okay, now where do we go? We head towards the water, right? We head towards Santa Cruz, and kind of didn't know where to go, and we're like, I guess we better just get further away, because it was like kind of heading towards Santa Cruz at that point, and we're like, didn't really know.
And you're with Laura Lewis? Is that who you were with? No, you said.
Well, we were staying at her place for one night.
Okay.
But the next day, you know, everybody's evacuated.
Yeah.
They left. They weren't even there. They had already left because they had another place to stay, and they have family and stuff. So they left. And then, so they let us use their house, but then even we left, and then we went up to the Bay Area. We stayed in a hotel for the night, and we're like, this is weird. And then that was the next day was when we found out the house was
gone. And you find, you're watching the news, or how do you find out?
Well,
maps and
I had a neighbor who was actually stayed in the fire, and I didn't know that at the time. You know, in the mountain communities, they're like, some are pretty close, some are a little bit more distant, and I had just moved to that neighborhood a couple of years ago, and people were pretty, like, kind of kept to themselves, and you couldn't even see neighbors' houses, and you didn't walk up on people's property.
Yeah.
So, I knew who they were. I had their phone number and stuff, but we didn't really have a tight relationship. But he called me, and he's like, we just had to leave, like, the whole mountain was on fire above us. We tried to fight it, and it was a lost cause, and we just kind of just had to run for our lives. Like, and it's pushing down towards our property and probably going to get yours.
And there's fire maps. You can see where
they've noted where
there's a flame that pops up on the map, and you know that that's noted as a fire site. I don't know how
just
they
on the,
document
on the
that.
Internet,
there's a live, website. Yeah. I forgot what it was. And I was watching that, and I was watching it move, crawl towards the valley into where John lives. And I was like, uh-oh, there's one right below his house. And I was like, that's not good. And then we started getting reports. Somebody drove up there and was house is gone.
I had a friend who snuck in there, a neighbor who snuck in on dirt bike or something. And he went up there and he's like, dude, I'm sorry. You're like, your house is gone. But
I was with him when that happened. We were together. Remember?
I mean, because there's a glimmer of hope, right? You're still
You're still hoping. Yeah, we'll be the one, you know, fire spotty. Yeah. It'll kind of move around and get certain houses and not others. But fortunately for me, my main home where I lived and all my things burned down, but there's a little one bedroom like ADU cottage.
Yes,
my friend was living at the time, and that didn't burn down, which was a great thing. And and the rest of the property was kind of spared, at least on my property. It was really just the house that disappeared, and bushes, the trees, everything else was still there. Friend had a little cottage, and so.
So you, when you heard that, so he, this neighbor tells you, "I'm so sorry, but your house is gone." It was basically like that.
Yeah,
and you were there too.
I was in the car with you, and yeah, I remember you getting that call and just being like,
"Is that even real?" I mean,
yeah, I just pulled over. I think for a minute, I'm like, "Okay, now what?"
And yeah, because we just been go to that point, like. Literally surviving for the second and getting all this stuff. We were trying to do things because you think if you do things, if we move this here and we run from here to here, like maybe we can get some things together and we'll get back onto the property again and it'll pass and we got to be prepared for the next thing. But that was the first moment I think that we just stopped and we're like, whoa.
Yeah, I remember I had, yeah, I was just, we just pulled over and I was like, okay, I think I turned around and went and told Elizabeth and we had our little trailer, which I did hitch up on one of our three missions back, hitched up our trailer just with the thought of like, well, we might need to sleep in this for a few days or whatever. But, you know, I remember going in there with her and we had a little talk and a little cry of just, all right, now let's figure out the next step of our life, right? And found a hotel to live in for a while. We moved to a couple hotels and then eventually found a nice, you know, it was Menlo Park. It's a beautiful place. We stayed there for a month, but very different than the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Yeah, but so you drove back up with the trailer at that point and saw it for the first time.
No, they weren't letting people in, and they were getting stricter and stricter about that. Because and actually, I got taken in there by a fire marshal that I knew who was working for a different county, and he's like, hop in. I don't want to name him, he and a couple firemen brought me in to the house and we'd up to the property for the first time. And yeah, I got my first glimpse of it. And there was actually fire, still smoldering. Active fire moving its way on, railroad ties kind of throughout the property, you know, and I'm very fortunate that he did that because, you know, we might have saved the house from the rest of the property from burning down because we were taking some buckets of this pool had emptied. And we think that played a big part in stopping the spread because the fire kind of, it's like above ground pool, you know, one of those Costco ones.
Yep, yeah.
and that thing got melted and all that water just kind of created a little pathway of water, a little river that looked like where the fire was close to stopping. And then it kind of, embers have kind of reignited and then it come day or two after. And so we went up there and we saw some fires kind of spreading and we grabbed buckets and poured out and a few little flames and, you know. And
that may have done it.
You know, didn't hurt.
Yeah, didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, wow. I'm just going to take a moment to absorb that myself.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. Now, what do we do now? You look at your wife, you look at Chris, and say, what the fuck do we do now?
Well, that was when Justin Kohlberg came in and said, do you guys want to do a video? Mm-hmm. Or not a video, but a film. Somehow he got somebody to donate. Apparently 16mm film is very rare now. The old, like, you know, 8mm, 16mm. And he had a whole crew out there in the ashes. And he just said, let's do a video. He's like, pick a song. And we had a song off the record called Garden of Pain. And John's last name is Pain. So it was like the moment John mentioned that to me, I'm like, well, this is too good. We have to just go through this.
You got to make lemonade out of lemons.
And there was so much emotion built in this. And so when they brought it out, it was a continuous shot. You can see it on YouTube. It's Wolf Jet, Garden of Pain.
Oh, I've seen it. Let me tell you, anybody needs to watch this because it's so emotional. The music is fantastic. It's just,
and then
if you heard this story now and you will go watch that, you will see what they're talking about.
Right. And I remember
there was about a month, but, you know, we took some time to process before we did that. But then we thought about, like, what can we do? And I wanted to get the thing cleaned up, and we're like, well, before we do that, let's, like, you know, this is a big moment in our life. Like, you know, you can, it's kind of like, we got to do something positive, you know, out of this, or like just at least get something out.
I want to kill this garden of pain. At night, my memories haunt me in my sleep. There ain't nothing I can do but sing. Sing to the pouring rain. Maybe this old garden can still grow nice things. From my pain, it can bring forth peace. And all my tensions shall be released. And we can laugh and smile again. Can
That sounds like the foundation for what you've worked from, you know, from there, right, to where you are today.
This is the garden that we're building.
We're gonna shift this a little bit. Just keep talking, but you guys are on a trajectory from that moment. Maybe, you know, the Garden of Pain video rebuilding. I mean, a lot of people would say, "Fuck it, I'm out of here."
Yeah,
and that's not what you did, right?
Nope. Sometimes I wish that's what I did, but
fast forward 3 years later.
Honest answer.
But you know, I didn't want to leave my property. We still had a lot of life there.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the trees and the land was still feeling good to us. So we decided to go on that journey of rebuilding, and you know, where I was at a place in my life where I'm like, all right, I think I can do this.
Yeah. You know? And you're still doing it.
We're still doing it.
Yeah,
we're
still doing it.
3 years in, we just had the three-year anniversary of the fire, and still don't have the roof on. We're kind of in that framing, but the roof could be on in the next few weeks. So, yeah.
I'm moving back to Boulder Creek in a few weeks. So I'm pretty excited about that, to be back in the area, just down the road.
What a story of perseverance and just, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm not going to try.
I think the words I use is too dumb to stop.
Too dumb to stop. Well, I mean, maybe that's... and meanwhile, the music carries on. So now, you know, most recently, you're back out. You're playing here. We saw you a couple of weeks ago. What's been going on with the rekindle, bad word, of the band?
Yeah. Well, we recorded an album a couple months ago with Jonathan Kirshner, who we talked about earlier, out of Oakland. Had a great experience with him. He produced it.
A couple of great special guests. We had Jason Crosby on the record, mm-hmm. and Alex Jordan plays keys on it as well. And he's been involved with the band off and on when he has time because he's a busy guy.
But. He is a busy guy. He Alex and Jason, both former guests of ours on Tales from the Green.
And also great legendarily guys. Great human beings.
Fantastic.
And shout out to both of those cats.
Both of them. Jason tonight. I don't know when this will come out, but Jason is playing with Jackson Brown tonight.
I know.
Bad, huh?
Yeah.
He's been doing that for a while.
Yeah. I saw Alex on one of your videos. I said, wait a second, there's that. But you had told me, one of you had told me that you knew Alex. We'll see him tomorrow. So,
yeah, we knew him from Midnight North days. And he was in the band more at the beginning, and then he started doing a bunch of stuff with the Fox Theater, and his career is kind of shot out of control.
He's all over. Great guy.
And
all
that stuff, again, like Terrapin was, if we can go back to that.
Yeah, let's bring it
time. That was such a magical brew because it gave so many musicians an opportunity to hang with, like, you could be on stage and like John got to play with Phil Lesh, and you know, mm-hmm. like it gave a lot of musicians the opportunity to kind of hone their skills, like just like they talk about the Wrecking Crew or these like Muscle Shoals. It's like all of a sudden you're the house band, and then Greg Allman's showing up tonight, and that's how Graham and Elliot got so good so fast, is they were just hanging with some heavy people. And it's like, you don't get worse when you hang out with those people. You just see greatness, and you just like learn, as Miles Davis says, you always play above what you can do, play better than you are, you know. And that's what they learned to do, and that's kind of where we got a little taste of that. But that whole scene has just emanated out and is now still emanating out.
Oh, it still is. I mean, we're in it. You guys are in it right now.
I feel like that's you know, come to fruition in a different way for us.
But I guess going back to the thing a couple of weeks ago with, you know, the coalition, the everybody coming together, and it's just great. So, okay, now tell me what's on the horizon. We know today we kind of got up. How about that tour that got canceled? Obviously, it didn't.
Well, we redid it.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, okay. We did it even better than the first one, probably.
We went out to Tennessee, where my family's from, and North Carolina, South Carolina. We spent 2 weeks out there and ate a lot of biscuits. It was a biscuits and gravy tour, so we had to eat biscuits.
I guess you had to.
So we did that, and that was accomplished. And then
Been running around all over California. We just got back from Tahoe and Nevada. We went up to Sparks and doing a lot of like summer kind of festivals or a little concert series and things like that. Things like we're doing today. Yeah.
And we're getting to hang out with a lot of new bands, and there's a new generation coming in, like, you know, I don't know all the different ones, but like getting to know some of these other bands that are newer that we never knew about, like Placerville has a whole scene, Hattie Craven, and then there's like Boot Juice, and that whole like Sacramento area is like ripe with a bunch of great musicians. And you know, so it's like there's a whole new generation coming out of touring musicians.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, it's great. And then also AJ, Molly, obviously Molly Tuttle and Billy Strings have a lot to do with this, but the resurgence of bluegrass music in America is incredible.
Yes.
And so a lot of our friends are involved with that. So we know AJ Lee. She's going to be on the record. We did a song with her. And so, yeah, it's just kind of like we're finding new roots to grow out. And I think we're hitting a new echelon of musicians that are just like, everybody's on fire.
Well, they're going to be coming to you. They're going to be coming to you. You're going to be going to them.
You got to keep up with them. That's the hardest part.
do you have a, I mean, I hate to define the music, but you have a.
So do I.
Genre. Yeah. I don't want to define
it. I don't like that.
Forget that question.
I like folk and soul music. You know, that's what I like personally. That's the kind of music I listen to. But I think Americana is a good word.
It's all encompassing, I guess.
Gospel, you have to be really careful with because it has religious connotations, but.
I feel like folk and soul describes it pretty well.
Yeah.
It's like this blend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great music.
Thanks.
That's what I got to tell you. You know, so, well, listen, me, Tales from the Green Room, the Marin County community, welcome you again. Look forward to watching you establish yourselves as part of the legacy, you know, of not only the Marin scene, Santa Cruz scene, East Bay, all of it together, you know, the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And then bringing that on the road and bringing some of that in some other places. And
2024, baby.
2024. But it's been a real pleasure. And let me tell you, meeting you guys a couple of weeks ago was great. I loved hanging with you and talking to you. And the whole story, you know, your story, John's story, is, I guess, that, you know, it's something that it's there, but I think you guys embrace it when you have to, but you're not. What I really respect is, okay, you know, that happened anyway. You know, I'll tell you about it, but let's get back to the music.
The operative word is healing.
Yeah.
And that's what this band is actually built on, is the concept of family and healing. Yeah. You know, Jet is my family name. My grandfather, Roland Jet, I never knew him, but, you know, it's like this legacy of the family back in Kentucky. And it's just like we've created our own family. It's like a chosen family here. And we have so many people that we rely on each other. We cry in each other's arms. We, you know, we go to each other's families' houses for Christmas and Thanksgiving, and, you know, and we like to bring the audience into that experience of what that is like, because that's a big part of being Southern that I think we have to offer the rest of the world, is we know how to do family style. That's like what we do. And so that's really important. But also the fire taught us that we can heal other people with music, but we also are healing ourselves. You know, it's part of, and it, the song Broken, for instance, the one that Laura sings is all about that. Like, as humans, if you survive and you can still smile and you can go through the tough stuff and still smile, to me, that was always like the most important and most strongest thing that a human can do, is find joy after the trauma. And that's what we're all doing. We're all just healing, and we're all broken, and we're all, you know, getting back together.
Towards the tragic, and that's why I'm confused. You wake me up and shake me, you leave my ego bruised. When you tell me I've been broken by the life that I lived through. The story may have heartache, but it's got redemption too. So what if I'm broken? I still got time to be a saint.
It's a beautiful thing. And music does heal. I say that I'm the president of Music Heals International. I don't know if you ever heard of that organization.
No, we
teach programs to kids in Haiti. Haiti and India and now Venezuela.
Wow.
And these are some downtrodden folks, especially Haiti. Probably the poorest country in the world.
Some of the
Sarah Wasserman is our executive director.
Okay.
Rob Wasserman's daughter.
Yeah. It's his daughter.
It's his daughter. Great. Yeah. And it's fabulous. So music heals. That's music.
That's awesome.
There you go.
Yeah,
so you get it.
Yeah. I'm getting chills talking to you guys. Let's finish with just a shout out to the rest of the band. We mentioned Laura.
Laura T. Lewis. We love you. And Will Fort on guitar and lap steel. And Duncan Shipton on the bass.
Cool.
And they'll all be here in a little. Well, they're probably already here waiting on us.
That's probably why my phone's buzzing right now.
Let's go listen to some music and play some music. I can't wait. Thanks,
Dennis,
a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Dennis.
Appreciate
See you around.
Cheers.
I've tried so hard to find my own.
Thanks for listening to Tales from the Green Room, a presentation of Mount Tam Media. You can hear more spontaneous stories from the secluded confines of green rooms on our next episode. To experience all Mount Tam Media productions, including the Woman Are Smarter podcast, log on to mounttammedia.com. We'll see you at the next show.